If you've experienced a DNA surprise, you know that your emotions can range from shock to denial to grief to anger to confusion to joy and around again. And sometimes it's hard to find people who understand this unique experience. Sometimes we feel a little stuck as we navigate this journey. That's why we created the DNA Surprise Retreat. At the DNA Surprise Retreat, you'll enjoy 6 expert-led sessions to help you process your DNA surprise. You'll eat delicious catered meals, and most importantly, you'll build beautiful friendships with people who understand you, all in a stunning private ranch facility in the Arizona desert. If you've had shocking DNA test results, know that you're not alone. This retreat is for you. Join us September 19th through the 22nd, 2024 in Phoenix, Arizona. Registration is open now. Reserve your space at dnasurpriseretreat.com. I'll see you there.
And I feel safe having anger towards him because he's on the other side. So in my belief system, he gets it. Like, I suppress my anger with my mom because she can't hold space for it. But him being on the other side, I don't have to worry about his human reaction. So when I'm mad, I'm like, fuck you. You know, I just like really give it to him.
Imagine spitting into a tube, sending off your DNA, and unknowingly turning your life upside down. For me and thousands of others, this is our reality. I'm your host, Alexis Auerselt. In July of 2021, I discovered that I am an NPE, someone who has experienced a non-paternal event. In other words, my biological father isn't who I thought he was. This podcast shares the journeys of people who were shocked by a DNA discovery, mostly through modern DNA testing. We're telling the stories of NPEs, adoptees, and donor-conceived people and their families. This is DNA Surprises. Before we begin this episode, please note that there are references to suicide in this story. If you are experiencing thoughts of self-harm, please contact an emergency or mental health professional. If you're in the U.S., you can call or text 988. Sometimes DNA discoveries occur without the aid of a DNA test. In this week's episode, Jen shares how her mother revealed the truth about her paternity after a near-death experience. After locating her newfound family, she confirmed her biological father's identity through DNA testing. Jen shares a story of generational trauma, estrangement, and hope for the future. She talks about how she finds connection to her family in this world and beyond, and why accountability is so important for our parents. Thank you for sharing your story, Jen.
My name is Jen. I'm 48, and I currently live in Tennessee. My DNA surprise story is a little different, I think, than some of the other podcast guests, because I didn't actually find out through DNA, but I did confirm through DNA. My story really starts in fourth grade. When I was in fourth grade, I came home from school on September 9th, 1982. I came home from school, turned around the corner, because back then we all walked to school. Mm-hmm. So I walked to school with my little gang of neighborhood friends. Coming home from school, I turn around the corner and I see an ambulance at my house. So I run home and I run inside. And my older sister, who was 15 at the time, was standing at the top of the stairs telling me, don't come up here, don't come up here, don't come up here. Obviously, I did not listen to her, because why would you listen to your 15-year-old sister? Ran to the top of my stairs and saw paramedics in my mother's bedroom. And what I know now that I didn't understand then is that she was having her stomach pumped because she took a massive amount of pills in a suicide attempt. So I came home from school to find that my mother had attempted suicide, not understanding at that time what was really going on, But my mother was taken away in an ambulance and was gone for a month. And back then, in 1982, I guess families were just a lot less managed by government and community agencies, because me and my four siblings literally just were home alone for a month while my mom was inpatient in a psychiatric ward. There's kind of two stories to my life, now three. There was my life before that day, there was my life after that day, and now there's my life after my NPE story.
Yeah, so you were under the care of your 15-year-old sister, basically, during that whole time. Yeah. Okay, wow.
Yeah, my 15-year-old sister took care of the family while my mom was hospitalized. So I have three older siblings who are 8 years, 7 years, and 6 years older than me. So my mom, at the age of 17, has three babies right in a row, boom, 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 with my birth certificate father. Then 6 years later, I come along. And then 4 years after me, my little brother comes along. Turns out my little brother is also an NPE. We're from the same father.
Okay.
So my biological dad and my mother were both married, lived in the same town, and had this really long-standing affair. I found this out in January of 2020. I was, at that time, just coming off of doing van life for a year. So in 2017, I filed for divorce. My divorce is finalized in 2018. And I have this like kind of massive midlife crisis. I quit my job. I give away everything I own. I divorced my husband. I took sabbatical and I gave up my apartment. And I literally packed everything I owned into my Jeep. And I just spent a year driving around the country, like hiking and sleeping in state parks and just embracing freedom, I guess.
How was that?
The most amazing time of my life. The most amazing time of my life. And really healing. I did like a lot of trauma healing work in that time, because embracing the unknown is very therapeutic, right? It really like helped you to develop, or it helped me at least, to develop this sense of faith that everything will be okay. And that the universe always has my back. And it was also just cathartic to just spend so much time in nature. Like, nature does not give a shit about you. The mountain doesn't care how tired your legs are. If you want to get over the mountain, you have to keep going. And so spending a lot of time in nature really helped me work out some of my shit. Mm-hmm. And so that period of my life was coming to an end. And I was, you know, feeling really like refreshed and renewed that I had sorted myself out in this year. And I was dating a new guy, and he and I were trying to decide, like, what's next? Where are we going to plant roots? Where are we going to settle down? We both have adult children. So his kids are on the East Coast. My kids were on the West Coast in California. So we kind of took to separate corners. We each wanted to go be with our children and do some accountability work, like spend some time sitting with our kids, apologizing for some of the mistakes we had made in our parenting, really like trying to be in the healing space with their kids. And so it's during that time that my guy and I are like on separate coasts that I get a call from one of my sisters to tell me that my mother is in the hospital. My mother was found by her after, I think it was like 5 days of my little brother, who's her caretaker, not being able to reach her. Her building management got a hold of my brother and said, you know, we have your mom. She's incoherent. She doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know where she is. She was like naked and wasn't like toileting herself properly. And everything was a mess.
Yeah.
And so she ends up in the hospital and she's in intensive care. And my siblings put out the call to me. And I've kind of been no contact with my siblings for a number of years. We each have kind of taken our own space to do our healing work. We come from a traumatized world. So obviously we're all living in our trauma. Mm-hmm. We've all kind of been in our separate corners. I'm mostly no contact with my mom. So like around the holidays, we communicate. And I would occasionally send her care packages from when I was living in California. But there's no like social connection. The five of us siblings, we kind of all go home to Illinois. So I grew up in Illinois. My mother is in the Chicagoland area. My little brother is in the Chicagoland area. We all go home thinking our mom is going to die. And we're going to kind of say our final goodbyes. My mother was in intensive care and having a medication-induced psychosis. And the doctors kept telling us this is sundowners and she's developing Alzheimer's. But my little brother, who had been her caretaker, had said Absolutely not. Like, she's of sound mind. She's very coherent, and it's got to be something else. And so my assumption was it was medication induced. Turns out that was right. So because she's in a medication induced psychosis, she's like, she thinks aliens are crawling through the wall behind her to kidnap her in the middle of the night. Like, she's, all kinds of interesting things are happening in my mom's mind.
Intense. Yeah.
And she's really paranoid. And she's really aggressive, and she's attacking the nurses, and she's ripping out her IVs. And so the hospital staff said, someone has to stay with her through the night, or we're going to have to put her in a psych unit. I'm there alone. My kids are grown, and they're in California. My poor little brother, who's been taking care of my mom solo for 20 years, is tired, and he has children. And it just made sense that I would be the one to stay with my mom. And so I'm spending the night with my mom, trying to get comfortable, sleeping in a hospital chair. And she wakes up, and she comes out of her psychosis, and she says, I have something to tell you. And she says, your dad is not your dad. Your dad's name was John H. And I thought, okay, this is just a part of the psychosis. But she went on talking and talking and talking and talking. And the conversation ended up lasting 5 hours, and she was completely lucid. And she told me horrific details that I did not need to hear about her and my father's lovemaking, like all this like really inappropriate stuff. And I can't escape the room because the hospital staff has said someone needs to be with her. And I'm like literally in shock the whole night. Like I totally dissociated, right? Like I had to compartmentalize to take it all in.
That's the first thing she says to you when she wakes up is boom. She sees you and then comes out with this secret.
Yeah. Yeah. I have something to tell you.
So you said you dissociated. What are you thinking?
I'm literally thinking, like, just get through the night. Mm. Just get through this. And like, I was telling myself, like, you can think about it and you can process it when the night is over. And I'm just literally sitting there for 5 hours, just taking stuff in. What I suspect was happening with my mom is that she feels she had a near-death experience when she was going through all this. And she was born and raised Catholic. Like, my family was hyper-Catholic. Three of her sisters are nuns. One of her brothers is a priest. This, like, really dogmatic Catholic upbringing that she survived. Mm-hmm. And so I suspect that she felt like, I need to get these secrets out before I die, or I'm going to go to hell.
Okay.
And so it was really a confessional. And I say that because she didn't seem sensitive to my feelings, right? She seemed really happy to finally have an audience to tell her story to. Mm. And I felt happy for her that she could have some catharsis, you know, in retrospect. But in that moment, I was just in shock. And then later, I was just angry, right? That it was all about her, and she didn't seem to have any clue as to the fact that she literally just, like, picked my life up and shook it. Mm-hmm. And now I have to deal with all of these like pieces that have just kind of been thrown up into the air.
Did she apologize or anything like that during the conversation?
She did apologize, but with a caveat. She apologizes for like all the wrong things. I mean, not that I don't want to dismiss any apology. I'm glad that she's trying to take accountability to the capacity that she has. She can take accountability. But her apology is always about the affair. I'm so sorry I had an affair. I shouldn't have done that. I literally have zero judgment of that at all. You were 25 years old. You were in a miserable marriage. You already had 3 kids. Like, you fell in love. I get it. Like, that part I actually really get. Mm-hmm. But she does not apologize for how it's affected me or for the 45 years of lying. Those things she won't apologize for. We're in this weird place right now where she won't answer any questions. Like, over the course of the last couple of months, I keep reaching out to her to be like, hey, can you answer XYZ about, like, I have questions about my birth father. And so now she's doing this thing where she pretends like she doesn't recognize my number. And she's like, whose number is this? I don't know who this is.
Oh, interesting. So when she gave you this name, John, did you recognize the name or anything? It wasn't somebody you remembered from childhood?
No.
Okay.
So my birth father, John H., who's passed away, this is how the childhood piece connects to the NPE story, is that what I found out through my mom's telling the story is that the day she committed suicide when I was in fourth grade is the day my birth father died.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she was so devastated by his passing away that she attempted suicide. Her kids, her five children were at school. And when we were at school, she attempted to commit suicide. And when my older sister got home from school, she found my mom.
And your birth certificate father, were they divorced by this point or where was he?
They were divorced. They got divorced in 1981 when I was seven. And then my birth father died in 1982 when I was eight. I suspect, although I can't get my mom to confirm or deny this because she doesn't recognize my phone number anymore, I suspect that my mother and my birth certificate father divorced and my mom had some hopeful fantasy that her and my dad would run away into the sunset together, which was not the case.
Yeah.
He was also married in an unhappy marriage and had two sons of that marriage, my new half-brothers. And he was like a ladies' man. So there were five mistresses at his funeral. My mom was not one of them. There was a woman with him in his vehicle when he died. He died in a car accident. There was one of his mistresses was in the vehicle with him when he died. So that woman plus my mom plus the five at the funeral means there's at least seven mistresses.
And a wife.
Okay. Right.
Okay. So you kind of, you learn this truth about what really happened. So, okay. So you're at the hospital. She reveals the truth. What happens next?
So I get through the night and my oldest sister, the one who took care of us when my mom attempted suicide, came in, drove in the night before from Ohio. And she was kind of coming in the morning to relieve me. She was going to go on shift. I was going off shift. She was coming on shift. So I walk out into the hallway. I see my sister. And I mean, I just, like, everything came out of me. It literally felt like I had fractured. I just felt like I broke into a million pieces. Like, whatever glue was holding me together, like, just melted completely out of my cellular structure. And I was so dissociated. I don't even know that I felt human. Like, I just felt like a shell or a ghost or however you want to describe it. I just felt like everything in my life is a lie. I don't know what it's like for other MPEs, but for me, that's been the hardest part, right? Is like, how do I piece myself back together? And I felt like all the trauma that I had had and that I had spent so much energy working through to try and be a better human being, despite my life circumstances, it just felt like all of it got reopened, right? Like, I had done so much work to heal the father wound. And then, boom, great. Now there's another dad who didn't want me, who abandoned me. And I was just like, I was a little pissed at the universe. I don't know what you know, what your spiritual beliefs are, what you call higher power, or even if you believe in one, but
I say universe too. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. So I was a little pissed at the universe. Like, what the F? Like, I had done this work. Like, now I have to, like, redo all the effing work. Like,
yeah. So you said you'd done all that work to heal the father wound. So your relationship with your birth certificate father wasn't a good one after the divorce?
No.
Okay.
No. So I'll give him credit where credit's due. I used to go and visit him every other weekend after the divorce, but we were always guests in his home. He married a woman, like, immediately after the divorce. He married a woman who had two children, my stepbrothers, who my father's very close to. That was their home, but we were treated like guests in the home. And so he did pick us up every other weekend from seven for me until I was 12. And when I was 12, my mother kicked me out of the house. This was my mother's way of disciplining us kids, was to kick us out of the house. And four out of five of those of us kids in my sibling group went through that.
Wow.
And so I got kicked out at 12. I stopped seeing my birth certificate father at that time because he didn't look for me. 3 months after I learned about this DNA discovery, I actually drove from Illinois to Arkansas to surprise visit my birth certificate father. And I ended up having this conversation with him. Like, why didn't you take me in? You took in all the siblings. You didn't take me in. That to me, felt like an indication that maybe he knew. He says he didn't. Mm-hmm. And he just couldn't take me in at the time because he asked where I was. Nobody knew where I was. And in his words, he was too busy doing crack and having fun.
Wow.
To be a dad. He's not interested in being a father. He never really has been. He told me that when I went and saw him in April of 2020. So that I just never really, not the dad type.
Where did you go? Where did you go when you were 12?
I did a lot of couch surfing. So I slept in unlocked cars. I would kind of walk around, sleep in unlocked cars. I had a handful of girlfriends who would kind of sneak me into their bedroom windows at night. There was like a group of friends I had who would do that. And I would kind of bounce around, you know, I would do 3 or 4 nights at this person's house, 3 or 4 nights at another person's house, you know, until their parents caught on and then I would move on. This lasted from, I was out of my mom's home from 12 to 16. I went to Michigan with a girlfriend's aunt to kind of play nanny for her kids. Then I was in Florida for a little bit with the same family, like another aunt playing nanny. And then I stayed for about a year and a half with a friend who, her parents were addicts, and so they kind of didn't care what was going on in the house. And so I spent a lot of my time there. And then I lived with my boyfriend's older sister for a while and played nanny for her. And then at 17, I went back to my mother's home for about 6 months and then ended up moving out with my baby daddy. I was a teenage mom, moving out with my baby daddy and getting my first apartment. Mm. So my birth certificate father, I stopped seeing him when I was 12. I've seen him twice since then. Once when I was 26, I threw a birthday party for my older sister, and he came for that. And it devolved very quickly, and he said some very unsavory things. And my husband said, "Get the F out of my house." That was the last time I saw him until I was 46, so 20 years later, when I showed up at his house to tell him that he wasn't my father.
Mm. And he said he had no idea.
No, he had no idea. He didn't even know who I was, actually, when I got there. He thought I was my sister. He called me by my sister's name, kept calling me by my sister's name. I actually recorded the 3-hour conversation because I thought, like, again, have spent so much time through this journey being dissociated that it's like I can't hold on to stories or things or information. It feels like it just slips through my fingers all the time. And so I recorded that entire conversation and listened to it, like preparing for this. And I also felt like it would help me with my sibling group who are a little, I'm a therapist. And so emotions and feelings are my currency. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm very comfortable in the space of emotional processing, but my siblings are not as comfortable in that space. And so there's a little more avoidance. From my perspective, I've always been a little gaslit by my sibling group, like, oh, it's not that bad. Oh, cut it out. Oh, you're being dramatic. And so I thought, okay, I'm just going to have this crazy conversation recorded so that if they ever gaslight me,
yeah,
I've got proof, right, of how horrible our dad is. So,
did you tell your little brother?
Okay. So my little brother has known since high school.
Oh.
They never told me. Or 8th grade, I think. My biological father lived in the same town as we did. Him and his family and my half-brothers lived like across town in a small town, like small rural USA. We went to school with a bunch of our cousins. My older siblings went to school with my 2 older half-brothers through my dad. And my oldest brother and one of my sisters actually dated for like a 6th grade, 1 week relationship, you know? My mom used to babysit my half-brothers, just so many levels of weirdness. But one of my cousins is like right next to me in my 8th grade yearbook photo. Never had any idea we were cousins. All of this like family weirdness. But my little brother apparently was in school with one of our cousins. I think it was 8th grade. The story goes, he had a crush on her and she was like, we're cousins. And he was like, what are you talking about? We're not cousins. And she brought some pictures of our birth father and showed them to him and said, this is your dad. And he was like, that is not my dad. And so apparently he went home and confronted my mother, and my mother, I guess, admitted it to him. So he's 42 now, so he's known since he was like 15. He's known for 30 years, basically. I never knew. Nobody ever told me.
Did he say why he didn't share that with you?
He told me that he did share that with me. Maybe he did. I don't know. Like, we're talking 30 years ago. Maybe it was something he said and I just gaslit him and was like, oh God, whatever. Well, you know, and I never locked it in.
And you had such a traumatic childhood and adolescence.
Right.
I was going through, you know, like you said, slipping through your fingers. I think that's such a good way to describe these traumatic events that happen to us. Like, our brains just kind of break and they don't hold any information in.
Yeah.
So, okay. So he knew about it. So this was not a surprise to him.
No, not a surprise to him at all. He knew about him. And I guess my birth father and his whole family knew about my brother. Like, when we were kids, like, every few months, there would be these like packages on our front porch, these anonymous packages of little boy clothes and little boy toys. And what I found out now is that that was my grandmother and one of my biological aunts on my dad's side who were leaving gifts for my little brother, who they knew was my biological dad's. So I'm under the impression that they didn't know about me, or they suspected, but there was no confirmation. I'm not sure. I've gotten conflicting stories. My mom says she told my dad when she was pregnant, this is your baby. But, you know, I've asked her, like, did he show any interest in me? Did he come downstairs to like look at me when I was sleeping? Because my nursery was in the basement and my parents' bedroom was upstairs. And the affair happened because my birth certificate father worked midnights. And so my biological dad would come and, you know, he wouldn't have sleepovers.
Yeah.
With my mother, which went on all during the pregnancy. And my little brother's 4 years younger than me. So that, I mean, we're talking years that he's in my house under my roof while I'm there. And he has like no interest or desire to see or know or take any ownership of me as his daughter. You know, I asked my mom, like, how in the world are you just sleeping with this guy when he's impregnating you and just leaving you high and dry? He doesn't want to know his kids. He doesn't care if another man raises his kids. And she's like so love struck by him. And my mother comes from a really, really traumatized childhood herself. I mean, she's deeply, deeply wounded. She has not done her work. She's, you know, she's a baby boomer, and collectively speaking, boomers don't really like to do their work. And I apologize to, you know, anyone who's listening who might be that generation who is doing the work. I'm like grateful that some people in that generation do.
Yeah.
But collectively, like, they just put on your big girl panties. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she just has no good excuse. And she's just like, I was in love. That's all I can tell you is I was in love and I didn't care about anything but having him all to myself when we were together.
So you learned the truth. Your brother is not surprised by this. Was your sister surprised when you told her?
Yes. So my oldest sister, when I tell her in the hallway, she immediately does this thing that, in my perspective, she's been doing to me all my life. Oh, you know, she rolls her eyes and, oh, come on, Jennifer. You know, it's the medication or it's the Alzheimer's or whatever her opinion was. And I just said to her, like, if you can't be supportive to me right now, please just don't say anything, you know? And so to her credit, she did the best she could, I think, to get the space to provide some kind of emotional support to me. But again, emotional issues, psychology, it's just not really the language of my family. They're real comfortable talking about politics. And we're a very like divided family over that because everything digresses into politics. When I went to see my birth certificate father, I had to keep redirecting him to the purpose of the conversation because he just kept wanting to go on and on about politics. That gave me perspective on why my sibling group is like that. It's really just what we were raised with.
Yeah. So you find this information, you tell your sister, you tell your birth certificate father. In that time, are you trying to figure out who or learn more about who your biological father is?
Yeah. So my mom tells me who he is, obviously. And she says, your Uncle Vic is really your uncle. So my godfather, his name is Vic. And I always called him Uncle Vic because he was my godfather. And because he was him and his wife, my Aunt Carol, and my two quote-unquote cousins spent a lot of time like at our home and us going to their home when we were little. like my cousin Mark was like my buddy, and I adored my uncle, but he wasn't really my uncle. He was just my godfather, mm-hmm. but they felt like family. Turns out he really is my uncle because he's my biological dad's brother. And so she says, your Uncle Vic actually is your uncle. Here's his number. You can reach out to him and, you know, get whatever information you need. Like the morning of leaving the hospital, seeing my sister, I go home. I had come in from out of town. So I was staying in a girlfriend's house with my man friend, Michael, mm-hmm. Who's been an amazing support through this whole thing. So I'm kind of telling my boyfriend everything that happened at my girlfriend's house. And he's supporting me through it. Now that I'm reading the literature, I know maybe I should have waited. But I felt I was so thirsty for information. And I felt like, oh, my God, like, I'm old. I'm 46. What if I don't find everything out immediately? Like, what if I have siblings and then they die and I miss my opportunity? So I felt like this intense sense of urgency. So I reach out to my uncle and I'm like, is your brother my father? And my Uncle Vic says, yes, I believe so. I've always suspected this. And I suspect that's why, you know, you and I were always so close when you were little. Because I mean, I just adored mm-hmm. I just loved him so much. And he was like, I think that's because we are like biologically linked. And that's probably why we had that connection. So he tells me, you've got two brothers. And I say, can you reach out to them? It's okay if they don't want any part of this, but I would really like to do DNA so I can confirm. And so one of my brothers responds to my uncle and says, oh my gosh, of course. I would love to meet her. Please give her my number. And so then I reach out to my brother and we start having an exchange. And like 3 days later, this all happens like really quickly, like within 5 days, I go from learning to having pizza and beer with my new brother and swabbing his cheek for DNA.
Wow.
Yeah, we didn't do a spit test. We did like an actual like sibling test. So it was like a cheek swab. And it took about 3 weeks to get the confirmation. In the meantime, I start digging around my daughter's ancestry profiles because I had gotten my daughter's ancestry kits a number of years ago to get the raw genetic data for health reasons.
Yeah.
And I never really looked at like, I just didn't look at the family stuff. It never occurred to me. I wanted the health data. And I start seeing in their profiles, like, there's the girl who my little brother, who made the disclosure to my little brother. You know, I'm like, oh, I know that name. It's a unique name. And it's becoming clear to me that this is real. Mm-hmm. And so 3 weeks later, we got the confirmation. My brother and I are 99.98% half siblings.
What was it like to meet him in that capacity, to meet him as your brother?
It was amazing because for me, a huge part of my trauma story is the story of my sibling group and not being connected to my sibling group. That's a big, I think this is another piece of trauma that doesn't get spoken about very much in the healing world. We all talk about our mother wound, our father wound, but we don't talk about what it's like to feel disconnected from your siblings. And that is a great sadness for me to have such horrendous disconnection from my siblings. I get it. We're all traumatized. And so we all cope the best way we can. And we've hurt each other in that process. But it's a big hole in my heart to have a disconnected sibling group. So to sit across from my brother, and he was just pure joy. Like he was warm and open and welcoming and like, I'm so excited. I've always wanted a sister. I mean, there was genetic mirroring, that process of looking at him and being like, oh my gosh, there's my nose.
Yeah. You know?
There's my chin. And this is why I look different from my other siblings. Like I've always felt that sense of my three older siblings seem very, they're just bonded. I mean, they were all like boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. So they really grew up together and they were all really bonded. And I always just felt kind of on the outskirts of that. And then my little brother is so much younger. And then I was kind of kicked out of the home so young. And so I have a huge heart for my little brother, but he probably doesn't recognize that or would tell you that I'm lying because we've been so disconnected. But I've always felt like this really special place in my heart for him. And I'm guessing now it's because he's the only person I'm like fully related to.
Yeah.
But my new older half brother has been amazing. My other half brother doesn't want anything to do with any of this. I met him once, him and his wife, and he seemed really open. He was like, literally went like this. It was like, my sister. And I was like, oh, this is so great.
Yeah.
But then after that, it was nothing. He doesn't respond when I reach out. And I tried reaching out to his children, and my niece responded, I don't want anything to do with this. Please don't contact me anymore. And so I'm going to respect that. She's an adult. I'm going to respect that. But it hurts. It hurts my heart because it makes me think, like, what kind of trauma have they received that, you know, they don't even feel open to the possibility of like a new aunt who could come into their life and love them. It just really hurts my heart for them. But my other brother, G, we'll call him G, his name starts with a G. He's been wonderfully open and welcoming. And he has two really great kids who have also been very open, who are super sweet, and I adore them. They're grown too. My nephew just graduated high school and my niece is in college. So getting to know them has been wonderful. I moved back to Illinois. Like, remember, my guy and I are on opposite coasts.
Yeah.
And we're like, where are we going to live? And so I decided to move back to Illinois for a year temporarily to help ensure that my mom get put in a decent, like, we knew we had to put her in assisted living. And, you know, my little brother, who's been her caretaker, has a full plate. He's got a wife. He's got a daughter with autism, and, you know, he works full time, and, you know, he's just, his plate is full and he's overwhelmed. And so I just thought, I can get the shit done. So yeah. I decided to move home to make sure that we found a home for my mom and got her put in home, and so that I could have a year to just kind of take care of her. And then COVID hits. And so my mom's in a home, but it's locked down and there's no seeing her anyway. But I spent that whole year, I spent all of 2020, I spent all of COVID getting to know my older brother, like having game nights at his place and playing board games with my niece and nephew and eating my brother's delicious food. He's like this incredible cook.
Is their mother still alive?
Their mother is still alive, but they are disconnected from her. They've been no contact with her, I think, for 20 years.
Okay. I was curious if any of it had to do with a protection of her, but it sounds like no, because they're no contact with her.
Yeah. I honestly, my poor brother is like so traumatized by my dad and his mom that he's like, F them, F her, F all of them. My dad died, from what I understand, he died a millionaire. So I grew up really poor, like really working through poverty trauma is like a big part of the work that I've had to do.
Were there any concerns from either of them that you know of that you were going to try to stake a claim in the money? Because I hear that a lot, that families are worried that the NPE will come in and say, well, I'm entitled or that kind of thing. Were you ever up against any of that?
No. If any of them had that thought, they never told me. They don't have anything. Like, my brother, the one I'm connected to, G, he's self-employed. They never got any of that money. Their mom kept it from them. And then, as far as I know, squandered it away. I don't really know, but they don't have anything either. Like, we're all just working class. I'm also self-employed and have very entrepreneurial spirit. And so I feel like, oh, I get that from my dad that has rolled downhill to me and my brother.
What ended up happening with your mom? Have you talked to her? I mean, you said now she doesn't really like to talk about it. Did she ever tell you anything more after that 5-hour confession?
In the year that I lived there, whenever I would see her, which was not often because of COVID. So her assisted living place, like, had them on lockdown. They were not allowed out. So I wasn't really getting to see her much. I would go to the grocery store for her and, you know, I'd have to leave everything in the lobby. So I didn't get a ton of time with her. But towards the end of my year there, we did spend a day where I drove her around to all over Chicagoland to all the cemeteries where everyone was buried. And she did answer questions for me in that day. She told me a lot more about my grandmother. I'm a little stuck on that right now with my mom because I was kicked out so young and I just spent my childhood like basically being homeless because my mother's answer to, you know, having difficult rebellious children was to kick them on their ass. I have a fair amount of resentment because my grandmother lived in the town where I was, but I didn't know she was my grandma. And all of the cousins that I've met through my dad's side, and for the most part, my cousins have been very welcoming. Oh my gosh, it's exciting. Welcome to the family. All tell these really amazing stories of my grandmother and how loving she was and how she was the best grandma ever. And she would pick them up from school and she would bake cookies. And my brother tells that story too. And so I'm really kind of mad at my mom that she, not only did she kick me out, but that she kept me from having any kind of support. You know, I'm pretty sure if my grandmother would have known I was her granddaughter, I would have had a roof over my head during my childhood. Yeah. So that's kind of like a sticky point for me with my mom. But she was available to answer questions while I was face to face with her. Mm. But once I moved, everything just like went totally silent. I reach out to her. She pretends like she doesn't see it. Now she's got this new narrative going where she's like, I don't recognize this number. Who is this? Okay, mom.
Wow.
I just have to like roll my eyes and laugh because it's just so typical of, I'm just going to blatantly like avoid
and lie. Right. So how have you been processing all of this information? I know that you're a therapist, but I imagine you probably need external support for yourself to get through this. So what have you been doing?
Nothing. I wish I had a better answer. I tried. I went through three therapists. Because I'm a therapist and I'm a trauma specialist, so I'm, I have a very critical eye for therapists. If it doesn't feel like a good fit or I can tell that something's off, I'm like, you're fired. So I went through three therapists. The one therapist, she literally couldn't get it. She just couldn't get it. And she was saying all of the stupid shit that people say, like, well, your dad is still your dad. And I'm like, my dad gave up on me at age 12. Like, that's not a good consolation prize. He's a piece of shit, you know?
Yeah.
So I was really frustrated with her, like, saying that kind of shit. So I let her go. And then I had another one, a gentleman who, he was a somatic therapist, and I'm also a somatic therapist, but everything was about somatics. And I was like, okay, I need to tell my story too. And so I fired him. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see a pattern. Maybe I need to work this out. And then I had a third one who really just wanted to talk a lot about COVID and my stance on masking and like couldn't take my redirecting back to my story because it was in the height of COVID.
Yeah.
People are in their own headspace about what's going on in the world. And that therapist couldn't get out of their own way. So I hadn't done anything and I literally just compartmentalized. I was going through so much. All of this shit happened with my mom. I had gotten a divorce, started dating a new guy. We traveled all over the country. We're on separate coasts, moved back to Illinois. And then we moved to Sedona, right? Because we're like, okay, where are we going to live? Let's go live in Sedona. So then we moved across country. And then a year later, we're moving across country again. When I moved back to Illinois, I started my own company. Like my life was just so chaotic that I just kind of put everything on the shelf. And then I find out in July, I hear the term NPE because I put a post up with a photo of my brother. And one of my friends on Facebook says, oh my gosh, I'm an NPE too. And I was like, what is that? What? She's like, and then she tells me, and I'm immediately like, find all the things, find all the groups, join all the groups, order Leanne Hay's book, like start digging around all the websites, like just trying to figure out what's what, who's who. And one of the groups I'm in, was so helpful. They're all helpful, right? But I think we each gravitate to our different kind of nooks.
Sure.
And Harayeth has been really, really helpful for me. You know, I hopped on a few of their Zooms. It's really helpful to like hear other people's stories. And because a part of my trauma is not telling my story because I'm kind of used to being invalidated by my sibling group, like I stuff everything. And I would go into those groups and I would just be stuffing. And Erin would be like, do you want to tell any part of your story? And I'd be like, nope. She'd be like, okay. She's just like so gentle with me. You know, she never pushed. She just let me have my timeline. And then I went last weekend. I was at Harayeth Retreat.
Oh, okay.
And that was the first time that I told any of my story. And the poor facilitator for the session I was in, like, here I'm a therapist. And I'm totally dysregulating, right? I'm like literally like coming out of my body. I'm just dysregulated. I can't keep it in. I'm like, I'm going to vomit all the emotion all over the place. I break down in session. And the facilitator handled it so beautifully. And there was another therapist in my group. And they were just very supportive. And there was this older woman who has real like mom energy, and she literally just like pulled me in right here in her bosom and was just like mothering me.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that I told any of the story, and it was so healing to just finally let it out and talk about it, and then have everybody there just be in the holding space.
Mm-hmm.
Just be in the holding space. So it's really like just last week that I started doing any of the work.
Mm, that's so nice to hear. So where would you say you are now in terms of your relationships with your mom, your siblings, and everyone involved in your journey?
It's the same as it was before. My mom, she doesn't recognize my number, know who I am right now. So we're exactly in the place we were before all this started. I don't have any ill will towards my mom. I have a lot of compassion for her. I understand that she's doing the best she can given her unhealed trauma, but I honestly don't want to hang out with her. I don't want to have the holidays with her. She's never made an effort to be a grandma. So she doesn't get those pieces of me. She hasn't earned those pieces of my life. So I don't go out of my way for her.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if she ends up back in the hospital, I'm sure I'll go back home.
Yeah.
My birth certificate father, he's so vile. When I drove there in April, I really was in April 2020 to tell him. And I really had a lot of mixed feelings. Like, I felt like I've hated him my whole life. And then I was like, but what if he knew? What if he knew that I wasn't his daughter and he raised me anyway? That is something that a loving person would do. Perhaps he doesn't deserve my hate. You know, there's all these issues around child support and,
yeah,
you know, like these things that I was mad about. And I had to renegotiate all of those things for myself. Like, so I went down because I wanted to see and talk to him as an adult and like find out what his side of the story was. And he was horrible, vile, disgusting, just racist, misogynist, horrible. He was, his response to me telling him he's not my dad is, well, I'm not surprised. Your mother was always a whore.
Oh, wow.
Like, and this is just how he talks.
Yeah.
It's just, and I'm just like, so insensitive. Kept calling me by my sister's name. Didn't one time, never asked me anything about my life or how any of this is going for me. At one point he says, oh, how many kids do you have? He didn't even know how many kids I have. And, you know, I tell him 3 kids and I'm saying my daughter's names, and he like interrupts me and just starts talking about himself again. Like the level of like narcissism that he's operating with is just, that visit was confirmation for me that I don't need him in my life. And when I left, he didn't make any effort. He wasn't like, should we exchange numbers? It was nice to see you. He was just like, bye.
Okay.
And I sent him an email like a week later and said, I know I came unannounced. You didn't need to let me in. I really appreciate you letting me in. Thank you so much for your time. You know, I hope you and his wife have a nice life. And he never even responded. So that's over. My siblings and I kind of kept up a relationship for a few months after everything happened, but then everything fell apart over politics.
Mm.
And I had kind of said to my siblings, can we keep politics out of the family chat? Because it's hurtful for me because I'm different than all of them politically. And so they say things that are like ridiculously insensitive, but because they're in the majority, right? Because they all think alike, they're in the majority. So they don't have any concept that we could be offensive to anybody. And I was like, this is really offensive. It hurts my feelings. Can we just leave politics out of the family chat? And that didn't go over so well. And so I just kind of exited the family chat. And this happens a lot in my family. People have wounded relationships over politics in my family. Mm. It's just a bit.
What are your feelings about your biological father? I know that he died before you had a chance to get to know him, but based on what you've learned and the circumstances of how you were born and everything, where are you at with that?
I have compassion for him too, but I have a lot of anger towards him. I think he was a womanizer. He was young. He was only 36 when he died. Mm. He was drafted into Vietnam at 17. So I'm guessing he had trauma, and he was discharged from the military with a Purple Heart because he was wounded in an act of saving his brothers. So I think there's probably pieces of integrity to his character, but he was very handsome. I see pictures of him and I'm like, oh, this makes sense.
Mm.
He was tall. He was handsome. he gave my mother, who's a very meek, passive, insecure, traumatized woman, he gave her attention. I'm sure she just fell hook, line, and sinker for that. So I don't think he loved her, although she believes he did. I don't think he loved her in the way she believed he did, but I do believe he was probably kind to her when he was in her bed.
Yeah.
So I believe he was a womanizer. I believe he abandoned me and my little brother, and I think that's bullshit. But, you know, he's been dead since I'm 8, so what am I going to do? I do communicate with him quite a bit in meditation. Like, I'm a meditator, and so when I'm in that space, I have words with him a lot. His energy, I feel like, has shifted since all this happened. I used to be angry, and I like to see mediums. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, I had two mediums in the middle of session quit. They were like, I can't go on. This energy is too heavy. And then I've had some where it's like, it feels like his energy is getting lighter. And people are like, yeah, he's dark, but, you know, he's manageable. And then I had a session last week at Haraya at the retreat. The woman kind of shared, well, since you're doing the healing work and you're transmuting the pain into love, it's going to help your ancestral energies. And so whatever, we can't prove any of these things with science, but it feels real good in my mind's eye. So I have more compassion for him now too. And I do feel support from him from the other side and from my grandma. Like, the energy of my grandma's spirit has been very healing for me. Like, I'll kind of call her in when I need to feel some unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And I call her in when I know I'm in my own ego bullshit and I need someone to put me in check, because I trust her energy does it in a loving way. Mm-hmm. And so she'll call me out on my bullshit and still give me love. So yeah, that's been really healing for me, is to actually kind of harness these relationships with the energy of my ancestors.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. What advice do you have for a parent who is keeping a DNA surprise from their child?
Be accountable. Just be accountable. And that being accountable takes a fair amount of bravery. So I would say be accountable and be brave. Be brave and be accountable. You know, if you can tell the story of how you've been traumatized, if you can tell the story of how your parents, your spouse traumatized you, but you can't hold space for how you may have passed some of that on to your kids, then you are living in your blind spot. So just be accountable. It's really hard work. I know it's hard work because I'm trying to do it with my own daughters. I spent a lot of their childhood operating out of my trauma and really fucking up the mom gig, you know, just really hurting my kids with my pain. And it's hard to take ownership of that. And it's tough to sit in the space of letting them share the pain I've caused them with me. You know, it's hard to look in your own mirror. And so I get why people don't want to take accountability, why they want to deflect, and why they want to blame, and why they want to guess, like, because it's really hard to sit in that space of, I fucked something up. But for crying out loud, just stop the fucking cycle. Hold on to the bullshit. Be accountable to your kids. Let them heal. You know, just let your kids heal. Take responsibility. Mm. So
I love that word. I love that word, accountability. That's really it. What advice do you have for someone who just discovered that they are an NPE?
I would tell new NPE. It's interesting. I shared your medium piece yesterday on Facebook.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. It was really well written, Alexis. Oh,
thank you. Thank you.
And one of my friends was like, oh, I have a girlfriend going through this. And she opened a PM with all of us. And this woman has known for 2 years or 4 years and never heard the term NPE until I shared your Medium piece yesterday. So, God, there's so many of us out there.
Yeah.
But I would probably tell people, manage your expectations and don't self-abandon. You know, I think we so desperately want the people who've hurt us to be accountable, to take responsibility, to give us what we need to heal or what we think we need to heal. But let's face it, right? Like, we're dealing with traumatized people. That's why they're making these bad decisions, right? Hurt people hurt people. And our parents, who like effed everything up, did it because they're operating in their trauma out of their own bullshit. And so when we like go into these situations, like demanding that they like be completely honest, don't gaslight us, and we are asking, it's a totally unrealistic expectation. These are messed up people. They're going to continue to operate in messed up ways. And as long as we're waiting for them to give us what we want from them, we're abandoning ourselves. We don't need them to heal. I mean, I'm really happy for the people who do have parents that take accountability and they get that piece of healing. I'm so happy for them. But most of us are not going to get that. Mm-hmm. And so the healing work it's our own. It's our own journey back to ourselves. And, you know, you can sit in meditation and you can love your inner child and you can hug your inner child and you can tell your inner child that she's sorry. And your nervous system doesn't know the difference between that and you actually getting it from your mom. You're still going to create a neural template for healing. And so when we make it about, I need to hear XYZ from my mom or my dad, we're giving away our power. We're just totally outsourcing our healing capacity. It doesn't come from outside. It comes from within. So don't abandon yourself, right? Don't negate your story by outsourcing your healing needs to someone else. Do the healing on your own and manage your expectations. These people are not, they don't have capacity to give us what we need. If they did, we wouldn't be in the situations that we're in. So, you know, be realistic about what you're dealing with. You're dealing with messed up people.
I love that. That was such good advice. It's almost like you're a therapist.
Almost.
Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story. It's so interesting how much overlap there is between all of our stories, and yet each journey is so unique. So thank you for telling yours, and I hope that things continue in a positive direction with your brother. I'm really excited for you in that relationship.
Thank you, Alexis. I appreciate you giving me a space to tell my story.
Thanks again to Jen for sharing her story. If you have a DNA surprise story that you'd like to share, please email dnasurprises@gmail.com. Until next time.